Now on to our bloggers roundtable. High tuition made them do it. Two students say they robbed a bank to pay for college. Plus, one of the Gina Six takes a plea deal and could be out of jail in 8 months. With us is political consultant Jaimu Green of the blog jaimugreen.typepad.com. She's also the former president of Rock the Vote. We've also got Brandon Whitney. He writes the blog Homeland Colors. And Michael Fauntroy, assistant professor of public policy at George Mason University. He blogs at michaelfauntroy.com. Hi, folks.
How you doing?
Hello.
So, Jaimu, I want to ask you about one topic that we did in politics just briefly. It was about Obama and whether or not the fact that the Iowa caucuses over winter break could hurt him with students not being available either to caucus or to go ahead and leaflet and press the flesh. What do you think about that, knowing what you do about youth political organizing?
Well, I think the greatest impact is going to be from the foot soldier standpoint, that they're not going to have as many people to be knocking on doors and making those phone calls and doing all of that free labor that young people provide for campaigns. But there is a good possibility that he's going to miss out on some critical youth votes as well. We've seen in the past three national elections that the youth vote has steadily been increasing. And so people who, you know, want to count young voters out because historically they haven't played well, they need to look at the trend that started in 2004, was repeated in 2006, and again in 2007 state races where young people have steadily been coming out in larger numbers. And if anyone's going to turn them out, I think Senator Obama has a great chance to do that. But if they're not in Iowa for that period, then he's going to lose out on those votes.
All right, Michael, I want to move us to a different campus topic. In Cincinnati, two college students say that rising tuition costs led them to rob a bank. You've got 20-year-old Andrew Butler. He's a theater major at the University of Toledo. And his partner in crime, 22-year-old Christopher Avery, was studying engineering at the University of Cincinnati. In July, these two men, armed with guns and wearing masks, made off with $130,000 from a local bank. On Monday, both pleaded guilty to two charges of aggravated robbery, six charges of kidnapping. They face 20 years in prison and will be sentenced later this month. Now, tuition at the University of Cincinnati runs about $9,400 a year. University of Toledo, about $7,000 a year. Hard to say that this was a good move. What do you think really was this about the tuition?
Well, it gives a new, it gives a new meaning to the phrase partners in crime. I remember being a poor undergraduate student and I just never thought that, you know, robbing a bank would be a good deal. And so it strikes me as unfortunate. You're talking about kids who couldn't figure out a way to make it work. You know, there are always student loans and things of that nature. What troubles me is not just that they chose to rob a bank, but the fact that these kids are literally losing the prime years of their lives. You're talking about 20-year sentences. They're going to have to serve almost all of the term, and it's just a real loss all the way around.
That is insanely stupid what they did. You can work at FedEx. They give you tuition reimbursement. You can go part-time. I have a little brother in Virginia right now who's working his butt off to get money to go to school in fall. I don't feel sorry for them in the least, not even a little bit.
So, and hey, the Army's having trouble recruiting people. They could have, you know, joined the Army, gotten that $20,000 bonus, right, had their college paid for, but they did the crime. Now they're going to have to do the time.
They could have mowed lawns. They could have done a lot of stuff. It was insane.
And one other point. Listen, the tuition is high, but we all know of institutions in which tuition is much higher. And that $9,400 or the $7,200 or whatever the number is a big number, but it's not outrageous. And they could have figured out a way to get the money from other places.
Well, Jaimu, you know, there's a larger issue here, regardless of these guys' seemingly insane actions. What has really been happening with college tuition and people's ability to get an education?
Well, college tuition has risen, you know, about 40% since 2000. So there definitely is a feeling of being strapped, and whether it's parents who are paying for it or you know, many of the students who are having to pay for school themselves, you know, that 40% increase has not been matched by an increase in grants, an increase in their ability to get loans. It's even, you know, more expensive now for kids to get the loans because they're graduating with $30,000 of debt when they come out of school. So it's definitely an issue that many young people are struggling with, and, you know, working 2 to 3 jobs, not getting any sleep. But again, I think that this goes back to just a lack of personal responsibility on there. And, you know, I know so many people who struggle to put themselves through school, regardless of that 40% increase we've seen in the last 7 years. They need to take responsibility and not just find someone or something else to blame. I almost thought it was kind of like Law and Order when you have the defendants coming up with these ridiculous excuses all the time, and their lawyers are like, oh, yeah, he did it because he's insane. Oh, no, it was actually because of this. And this may just be a convenient excuse for them when you have so many college students dealing with that 40% increase in different ways, more productive ways. And, yeah, life is hard, but, you know, you don't take a gun and go into a bank to get that money.
Now we continue with our bloggers roundtable. With us is political consultant Jamu Green of the blog jamugreen.typepad.com. She's also the former president of Rock the Vote. Brandon Whitney writes the blog Homeland Colors, and Michael Fauntroy is assistant professor of public policy at George Mason University. He blogs at michaelfauntroy.com. Hey, folks, welcome back.
Hey,
thanks.
Howdy.
So let's move on to Gina 6. It's the group of 6 black teenagers accused of beating a white classmate last December in Gina, Louisiana. Now, on Monday, 17-year-old Michael Bell struck a deal with prosecutors, pled guilty to a juvenile charge of second-degree battery. Originally, he was charged as an adult with attempted murder. With this plea deal, he gets an 18-month sentence minus the 10 months he's already served. He could be out of jail in 8 months. Brandon, do you think this is a good deal for him?
Well, it's kind of hard to call. I mean, he did beat the kid up. I'm more concerned with the prosecutor. If anything takes place, or if anything occurs because of the Gina 6 thing, in addition to them being treated fairly, I would like to see the prosecutor and other prosecutors across the country who take such actions punished somehow. So I'm more concerned with stopping a prosecutor who's gone way over his boundaries, and looking into the other case where the young white men pulled the gun and things of that nature. So I would like to see some other things besides worrying about the specifics of his case, but looking at more into what's going on in Jena.
Looking at the issue of justice globally, Michael, do you think that's a possibility, or is it kind of a wrap that people have done what they're going to do? They're not going to revisit how these young men were prosecuted to begin with. They're not going to revisit the issue of the white students and their actions. Do you see any way that that could happen?
Well, I think if history is any guide, it's likely that some of this stuff is going to fall through the cracks. You know, those of us who pay attention to these sorts of issues and write blogs and are columnists in newspapers and people who profess to be leaders in other ways really need to get on the stick, because this is one of the issues, and I'm talking about generally in terms of prosecutorial misconduct, that I think really inflames many people around the country. You know, the prosecutor in this case has been quoted as saying that the deal for Bell is fair, which would suggest to me that everything else beforehand was unfair. And why, you know, I want to know, why didn't we get to this place a long time ago and save the community of Gina and people all around the country this aggravation? You know, and it just points out that, you know, there are too many prosecutors around the country who are able to get away with this kind of stuff and never face much criticism or retribution, because the cases don't get the amount of attention that the Gina 6 case has.
Can I just jump
in here
and say that I do agree that the prosecutorial discretion issue is key, and that definitely justice was dispensed differently in this case. But what I think really comes out of this plea is that the march made a difference, the protesters made a difference, the media attention made a difference. And for a younger generation involved in civil rights issues, it's important to see these wins. It's important to see these victories, because that is going to then lead them to, you know, take action the next time around. And that's why it's important that, again, I think media attention and organizing to get the likes of NPR and CNN and national cable news stations to pay attention to these issues is so key, because the deal was offered after the media companies won a verdict granting them access to the trial. And I think if any lesson comes out of it, that will be really helpful is that if you do organize and take action, that you actually can see victories, because we haven't seen a lot of those victories in our generation, as was, you know, seen in the initial civil rights movement. And I think that that will be a key point coming out as well.
Hey, Mariah, I think Jamu is 100% correct, but there is a downside here, and that's simply this. If a case cannot get the sort of attention that Gina Six did, then that suggests that somehow the facts behind the case aren't as legitimate or the story isn't compelling. That means that prosecutors can get away with this kind of stuff, and that worries me.
And you can't
well, I'd
march.
Say it puts it on us, the, like you said, the bloggers and the so-called leaders and people who speak about these issues, to really demand that media attention in the same way that it was demanded in this case. That, you know, we can't just stop and kind of rest on the laurels of he got a plea agreement, he's going to be out in June. That, you know, every time there's a situation like this, we have to organize, we have to take action, and not just kind of write about it or think about it.
Brandon, I want to actually ask you about a different issue, but related. There were all these news cases that happened after Gina Six, and now there's a big fight going on in Baltimore between the mayor and the local NAACP. Donald Maynard, black firefighter and paramedic, had said that he found a drawing of a lynching in the firehouse, and it led to a federal investigation. The NAACP demanded that there was hate crime prosecution, but Maynard confessed last week that he planted the noose. He's been suspended. And now there's been a whole other backstory to it having to do with exam cheating. But the Firefighters Union, in short, wants an apology from the Baltimore mayor, the local NAACP, and a black firefighters group. Does this kind of a hoax basically undermine the other issues of race that people have been talking about during and after Gina Six?
It does. The problem with it is that what this guy has done is that if anything else happens in Baltimore, and if it's a serious problem, they won't jump on it because they're afraid of being misled. And he should be fired immediately. But this, the way that they went about it, the way as excited as the mayor got about the news, and as excited about as the NAACP got excited about the news, when you look at Baltimore and the problems in Baltimore in terms of the dropout rates there and the crime rates and the drug usage rates, they should be as excited about those things as they were about that noose incident. Again, the guy should be fired. If there are any charges that can be charged against him, they should be made. But the problems in Baltimore are more than just a racist fire department, and they're proven innocent on that. But there are some serious issues that get ignored because it's easier to jump on these racial issues than it is to jump on black-on-black crime up there.
Michael, what do you think about that?
You know, when I first heard the story, I thought about the Duke LaCrosse case and other cases around the country in which you find out that there are hoaxes being perpetrated. I don't know if these people think they're helping the cause, but they're not. They're making it much more difficult for serious issues and legitimate cases to be addressed. And, you know, I agree that the firefighters should be dismissed. But the other part of it is, you know, those of us who are interested in making sure that issues like this are properly addressed, we need to do more in terms of vetting the cases first before we get too exercised about them. Because in the long run, those of us who are interested in civil rights and making sure that symbols of hate are not widely used end up with egg on our faces because we followed some guy down a path that ended up in leading us to a trap door.
Jamu, is it difficult to overcome these moments? I mean, there may be vastly more incidents of hate crimes or alleged hate crimes and just a few hoaxes, but for people who already are predisposed not to believe in hate crimes or the frequency, does this really put race relations back a few steps?
You know, I think it does take the situation in Baltimore back a few steps. But what I found, what struck me with this case is that the leaders of the two fire unions in Baltimore, their criticism of the mayor and, you know, wanting the apology from the NAACP, are they, you know, really able to say there is no racism that goes on within, you know, the firefighters in Baltimore? And are they only representing the white firefighters, or, you know, where's the representation of all of the firefighters? I feel like there was just such a big denial on their part that, you know, any racism happens within the Baltimore Firefighter Department because this is the example that it's just non-existent. And I'll admit, I'm a fan of Mayor Sheila Dixon, and I was happy with her leadership on this issue. And I think she has shown that leadership on a lot of the issues that, Brandon, you brought up as far as, you know, black-on-black crime and the dropout rate. And, you know, Baltimore is coming back. But, you know, I was disappointed in those fire unions.
We're going to have to wrap it up there. Thanks, guys, for joining us.
Thanks.
My pleasure.
We've been talking with Brandon Whitney. He writes the blog Homeland Colors. Michael Fauntroy, assistant professor of public policy at George Mason University. He blogs at michaelfauntroy.com. They were both at our headquarters in Washington, D.C., and at our New York studios, political consultant Jamu Green of the blog jamugreen.typepad.com. She's also the former president of Rock the Vote. And you can find links to their blogs and ours at nprnewsandnotes.org. You can also go to Speak Your Mind, an online series where you can sound off about the issues you care about. Go to our blog, nprnewsandviews.org, and click on Speak Your Mind.